Blog Talk Radio.
They take
They take the public's trust and throw it out the window. And we defend them. We actually defend them. Now, I know we have problems in which we feel like, you know, some things are not being justly balanced across, particularly in the justice system. I know some of you have very strong opinions about the APS sentencing that just took place here on the shooting scandal. And then there was just some young men who were found out on their college campuses for running an SAT scam. When my caller is called in, let me get her in. Let me welcome Monica Wright from Philadelphia. Monica, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great, doing great. I was just, you know, just talking about what you started off with last week about being brainwashed. So I want you, since this whole show is being based off of your theory, I want you to explain to me and our listeners your theory, and it seems like my co-host is calling in. Let me...
Hey, this is me.
Before we get into this, let me go ahead and make this official. This is Stacey Hopkins who just called in, and Stacey Hopkins is now my new co-host here at Down South and Dirty. Me and Stacey go back some ways. She's a strong community activist and political activist here in the Atlanta area, and I'd just like to welcome her to the Down South and Dirty team.
Thank you.
Y'all know both of us don't give a damn. So Monica, go ahead and explain to us about this brainwashing theory you have.
Okay. I'm trying to think, where can I start? Because I have really been getting in touch with what a lot of the people who I've been talking to. I don't want to talk in circles, so let me just try to get started. Okay, so I have this Facebook group, and it's called Black Communities Action Committee, and I have over 200 participants. I try to delete people who aren't active and keep people who are active in the group. And so what I found was that these same people who are in the Facebook group are also on my friend list. So I get to see what they talk about on their timeline. And so I see this pattern over and over again of, you know, people getting real excited about things happening nationally, happening globally, questioning what should we do, coming up with theories. And yet in my group, I said, here is a property I'm donating to the group. Silence, okay? Let's sell the property. Let's develop the property. Silence. You know what I'm saying? And I'm trying to figure out if so many people are about building our nation and everything, but if faced with having to develop one small plot of land, you know, no one has any ideas. I have to prompt and force people. Okay, you want to build this nation. Here's how we get started. Let's do it. So, I mean, what are your feelings on that, Scout? Because I'm actually trying to find out what are other people seeing what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of problems going on. I think in some point, in some ways, we have hoodwinked and bamboozled, where a lot of us have gone into that. I got my mentality, or, you know, I had to work to get this. You need to work and get yours. And we forget about the sense of community that helped make us great as a people. And I see that kind of goes across racial boundaries, but we see it more so in the African American community. If you look at the Asian community, they stick together. If you look at the Latino community, they stick together. When you look at even the Native Americans, they're doing their best to stick together. African Americans, that is our history, to have been our American history, to operate as fractured and disjointed people. So, you know, when I'm out there doing the organizing, I hear a lot of people, to be honest, I get a lot of that talking loud and saying nothing. Where people like, one of my favorite clips is from I'ma Get You Sucker, when the character named Kalinga, he's talking about going in, and people like, yes, yes, and he's like, let's go do it, and then they go, well, you get a lot of that. And it's very, very frustrating, and I think it's a combination of things. We're inundating people with saying, this, you got to work on this issue right now. This issue is the issue of the day. You got to do this now. And people are just, it's overload. Then you have people who are just tired. You know, they are physically, mentally, spiritually tired. You know, they're just worrying about how to keep their own roof on it over their heads and things of that nature. And then you have people who are just, they are the perpetually pissed off people. They're just mad about everything. They like to call out people for what they're not doing, but they don't want to be a part of the solution. And I think that's more of what you're running into, because, you know, whether people like it or not, whether you recognize it in yourself or not, if you're listening out here, there's a lot of y'all out there who fit that category. And, you know, there's a lot of people who will sit there and say, well, you know, black people need to do this, black people need to do that. When you say, okay, I have this idea, let's do it, then they either shoot everything you have down, or they'll tell you, you know, they'll give you 90,000 ways of how it won't work. Show me how it will work. And it is very frustrating. So, but I think we've bought into some sort of weird dynamic that has been laid down, some of it through slavery. And I think a lot of it is a learned behavior that we really need to unlearn very quickly if we want to uplift and support our own community. We have to stop doing it.
So I guess my question is it, do you guys think that it's an actual brainwashing I shared an incident that I saw in my granddaughter's Catholic school, where, you know, it's a very good 100% black enrollment Catholic school, and we pay $300 a month for my grandbaby to be there, and that's with a subsidy. And so I shared that I was standing at the door waiting for the door to be buzzed in, and two white teachers buzzed the door. They clearly saw me standing there. And three young black male students who were about, I'd say maybe about 12, 13, they were almost my height, but they were young. And they shoved past me once the door got buzzed. And this is a school where I had been really impressed with how mannerly the children were. But it seemed as though these white teachers, I don't think in a white school that they would have allowed these boys to shove past me, to run past me, to give them a hug. A brainwashing right there, that these teachers didn't acknowledge me and these boys knew not to acknowledge me. And in turn, would they not acknowledge their own community to get those hugs from white society?
I think we have been brainwashed.
Right.
Because
now,
we have.
You also have to sit there where you say to talk about learned behaviors. I mean, some of the things that we do, people have taught us to do over time. And like you said, these young black men, you know, because that's what they are, they're black men in training. They ran by you 1 year. You are an elder in that community. Okay?
Right.
They should have first allowed you to walk through the door, see if you had anything in your hand that you needed to be, you know, carrying or anything. Good morning, ma'am. How are you doing? Blah, blah. And went on about their business and finally walked down the hallway. So they were going to hug their teachers. I don't have any problem having love for their teachers, white, black, or whatever, but they should have been orderly about it. But the thing is, like you said, they discounted you, they knocked you over. The teachers didn't correct them. And
yep,
said,
they
hey,
did not correct them.
You see your elder back there? Did you speak to her? This is the Catholic Church. Tradition is supposed to be, you know, ingrained into them about taking, you know, about being mannerable and this, that, and the other. But they wanted to go get their hug and their approval from their little white teacher.
Right. And I fault the teachers, and I just saw something that to me felt sinister, that they looked and they didn't say anything. They smiled, they grinned, they accepted the hug, but they kind of didn't care either. It was like mission accomplished. And I'm going to talk to those teachers. You know, are they supporting what the black parents who are spending this money to send these kids to a Catholic school be taught the right thing? Basically, that within that one action, I would feel like I didn't get what I paid for at that school, you know. And these the parents would have never known that their sons did this.
Wow, it's really difficult because, you know, we see these little microaggressions every day perpetuated towards us. Becomes, you know, we have it so ingrained in our heads not to upset the good white folks uptown. And then, you know, there's the mentality of the good white folks uptown where we have to help and protect these poor people. No, you don't have to. We're not all poor. We're not all on drugs. We're not all thieves. We're not all thugs. So, how they look at us as we're some sort of poor little creatures. We need them to stand by our side and to fight with us as allies, but we're not something to be pitied or to be made a pet project, so to speak. So, and it's very, very difficult to get this through to some very well-meaning white allies and friends. But we have gotten, I mean, just look at how we look at things. When we want something, you know, like you go in the black community and you say, well, are you going to shop at this particular black vendor? No, I'm going to go to the white folks across town. Why? Because I get better service, I get better goods. That mentality is so ingrained in us that we always, that white equates better. And that we learn to reject our blackness, and I think that plays into a part of how we interact with each other, and it's something that this is some internal stuff that the black community really has to address. You know, while we're facing issues of racism externally, we've got some issues internally that we really need to take care of and also talk with our allies about, because this kind of nonsense has got to stop. And I'm tired of apologizing for my blackness. I'm tired of apologizing or feeling inferior for it. And, you know, stuff like this, it's conversations that we need to be had, that's for sure. Scott,
you know,
what's your take on it?
And it's really kind of interesting that, you know, you talked about that, you know, we will go by and look for services in the white people's neighborhood, because just before I got on this call, I was just in a conference call with some gentlemen, and we were getting ready to start a business development program over here in DeKalb County. Now, it was interesting because the brothers that make up this group, and there's a sister involved now, and I'm hoping that more sisters will be involved, but we all come from across the different ends of the political spectrum. Because, you know, everybody automatically assumes all black folks are Democrats. Whereas we do have our libertarians and our Republicans and But all of us came from across the political spectrum. We are business-minded, but we all, you know. And one thing was interesting to me was that in this group of guys, our first concern was our community. You know, it wasn't that the fact that you were a Republican and I'm a Democrat and you're a Libertarian and you something that we necessarily don't understand, but you have a very different political belief than we, but we understood that certain key things were necessary that may not even be supported by a particular party's platforms, but were necessary for our neighborhoods to grow, that we need to come together. Because we're also being brainwashed on that level. We're being brainwashed on we have to believe in certain things, and certain things have to happen, A, B, and C, for there to be progress. And those things don't always take place in that order or may not even be needed. But we've been told, we've been fed the same piece of bread over and over again. We're told that bread is good for us. We're told that we've been told that it's nutritious and we need to eat it. Don't go looking at nothing else because this is what you need. And like you said, learn behaviors. The Hispanics stick together. The Asians stick together. And we were learning stuff just on this call, or just about, okay, we can go in our neighborhoods and we know certain businesses we don't own. We know we don't own the weed store. When we get our hair, where the African-American woman buys our hair and our hair products, we don't own that store. We don't own the convenience store on the corner most of the time. We don't own the gas station. We barely own anything. We might own the barbershop, the beauty salon, and we own the wing joint. And ain't that
well,
wrong the wing joint because everybody got to eat.
Well, we don't
mm-hmm.
even own the product. You know, even
yeah.
if you, you know, you could be going to, you know, and it's ironic you should bring that up because I just came from the beauty supply store because next week is prom for my daughter. So, you know, most of them are owned by Asians. And even
mm-hmm.
if you were to put, even if you were to replace that Asian with a black business owner, the products that you're buying are not those, the majority of products are not those owned by black businesses. So,
we
don't you know.
Own the supply chain. Exactly. We don't look at it that when we've been brainwashed again, since, you know, and in all intents and purposes, we've been brainwashed into believing, you know what, that's just the way it is. I don't know, you know, like I was telling the guys, I said, you know, why don't we have our own, you know, or have our own manufacturing facilities? Why don't we have
mm-hmm.
our own distributors? Why are we working on those type of things?
Here's one thing that I can give you an easy answer. It's because we ain't started it. That's all. It's an
right.
easy answer.
And we don't
and
feel,
see,
and no,
I,
that's what we were getting to. That's what we were getting to. Now, the thing is that our learned behavior is, and we all know this because we have probably heard it 1,000 times, if we have a young African-American child who was very intent on getting their education. This child reads on a regular basis. This child is curious about the things that are taking place in the environment around them. They are learning. They are taking it in. They're not with the foolishness that's going on around them. We tell that child they're acting what?
Well, yeah.
We
yeah.
tell they're acting white, okay?
Yeah, they're
so
acting
then,
white. You talk white.
White.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why you talking?
And so then you want to fit in, and I remember my stepmaster always telling me that we will go in for the that we yearn to connect with the least common denominator. So we will go in, and we were like, okay, so me being smart is being white, so me being black means the opposite. So that means I'm gonna go out and act stupid. So then we don't read.
But
well,
on the
I can tell you this as somebody raised on the East Coast, and you know, I hear, and again, here's this pattern where people say that, but on the East Coast, in Philly, I was part of the Mentally Gifted program, And I didn't get this thing about acting white, but there were kids who were accused of acting white. It was because they used a very strange accent, okay? They changed the way they enunciated words. I was still immensely gifted, but I was still part of my community.
Right.
So
but you have people that in the South, it's a lot worse than that, because you got to think about it. Down here in the South, you have an incentive. There's an incentive that if you're African American to get in with our good old boy and become that boy, it's good. You know, do you ain't got a choice? You want to be Django or you want to be Steven? Okay.
Well,
and a lot of folks choose to be Steven. Okay, a lot of folks choose to be Steven. Okay, so what this comes down to, what the point I was trying to make is, because we don't value so the value of education has been diminished. So when you are not going out there seeking knowledge, you miss out on a lot of things. Because, see, I learned something today that I didn't know about gas stations. Gas stations, if you see an empty one, it says for sale. They really not trying to sell it because they're trying to lease it to you. They're trying to lease it. All the Indians and stuff we see on the gas stations, they're leasing them, and all they're responsible for is the lease and making sure they stock their own stores, and they get a line of credit to buy their gas. But see, we're looking at it for sale, so we're thinking we got to come up with a whole
new business model.
Thank you. To do this ourselves, but we've never, because we don't value education, which means that we're not adept at doing research and putting it together, that means we never find out that we could be owning stuff in our own neighborhoods. Because we don't know how white.
I have a question. Since you're bringing that up, and I know quite a bit about it. The gas station hustle with the Indians, especially in New Jersey. What people also don't realize is that they bring people. There was a point in time where Sikhs were getting political asylum in the U.S. because there was a problem against the Sikh community in India. And so they were bringing their countrymen over here who were pretty much working in human slavery. So, I mean, even if we got a gas station, we can't put one of our African-American people in slavery to work for free. They can have their people there around the clock and have them scared and won't pay them a dime.
This is true.
So they got their own hustle, okay?
So they're researching to get the upper hand. Then they use a model in our communities, and we all know it. We know they're enslaving their own people. They didn't tell their slave up because every once in a while you'll go through that another brother somewhere and he uses a watch and stuff. You know what I'm saying? So we'll feel like, okay, they gave a job to a black person and he watching us watch them. And he ain't getting paid much either, but he's glad that he got a little job and they pretty much they let him eat free and get soda. So, you know, again, he's glad he has to thank him because I'm getting a soda and some chips on a regular basis. Their default loving, they don't. If they loved you, they would give you a job at a good wage, they give you some benefits, and they give you an opportunity to make better for yourself. But they ain't trying to do that.
But the problem I have is that, the black community, we will get angry with the Asian community and, you know, the East Indian community and even the African community because they come to this country. And they will come here with 24 cents in their pocket, and they will use the system that's been in place here, and they will make it work for them. And so some of what I see is that we don't make the system as it exists work for us.
I agree 1,000%. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, and I apologize because I'm actually driving while I'm talking, so I'm missing some of what you're saying. But I do have a question. How would you explain the silence of the right now we're going at about 99% of the men in the Black Communities Action Committee. What would you explain or attribute that silence to? Because you're actually one of the silent ones, too.
Well, I come across it, and I mean, the thing is, the reason I haven't really paid much of attention is because one is Philadelphia, and I can't be on the ground to deal with it, and I know I got situations right here in Georgia that I'm dealing with, so I kind of prioritize on what I can make an actual effect on immediately versus what I might be able to work on later. I'll read you. And then, you know what, I'll give you that. I may need to say something. But my thing is that, you know, I'm so involved with trying to, you know, work my own group of people here. But what I can tell you is sometimes, but what I can tell you is that sometimes folks are silent because we all been taught that you give up your intelligence the moment you speak. So if I'm not knowledgeable on something, the moment I speak on it, you're going to know it. But I can. But as long as I'm silent, you know, whatever I'm presenting you non-verbally, I can sit there and look like I'm confident. I can sit there and look like I know. I can talk on something else that I'm very well versed in. But as long as I'm, and sometimes I think it's a complete lack of knowledge that allows us to be silent. I don't know enough about it to speak on it. Or I don't know it. Because I got a phrase that my cousin used a long time to me. You don't know what you don't know. You know,
no.
And sometimes
yeah, no, that's,
down
that's,
to it. They don't know what they don't know.
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting analysis. And I appreciate that because I had not really thought about that.
Mm-hmm. So you got brothers that sitting there, and if they feel like that, you know, their pride. If they open up their mouth and they sound foolish. Because, see, you're a woman. You're a woman. You're a Black woman. And you're bringing this to them. You're bringing this. We got a house. We're going to sell it. We're going to do this. You know, we're going to develop our community. This is, again, you know, these are very, from what I done got reading through your group, these men, when they do speak, they have a certain level of pride about them. Again, it goes back to the brainwashing. You know, their mental state has been altered to believe certain things. So now you got this sister coming in, and they proud Black men trying to stand up for their community, and they're following the leadership behind the woman. Not saying that they're stupid for not doing such, because I don't care who, if somebody steps up to the forefront and they grab the flag and they can punch a hole through the line, if they got the guts to do it, I'm following in behind them. We don't rush through. But see, some of them brothers sitting there, they're not going to get behind them because they're not proud. And I listen to a lot of men a lot of the time sit there and, you know, we know sisters are, you know, we know sisters are sisters. Our mothers were sisters. Our grandmothers were sisters. We know how they operate. You know what I'm saying? And some of us are basically, excuse my language, a bunch of pussies.
Well, it sounds to me like that you're bringing up an issue that most women have known for some time, that sexism is alive and well, and patriarchy is rearing its ugly head once again, because it that is a part of it. That, I mean, I've experienced it quite a bit. You know, if you bring an idea up, to a group of men, you're gonna be, you know, oh, that's a great idea, or, you know, now go sit down somewhere, and we're made irrelevant. I mean, we see this
right
now, and I mean, even going back with civil rights, you know, a lot of the women did the work, a lot of the hard organizing work. But all you know about is Dr. King and Abernathy and A. Philip Randolph. You never hear about the women who were behind it, who helped make that movement, basically help build it what it is. And, you know, we always hear on King Day about I Have a Dream, you know, how Dr. King spoke, but nobody ever mentions the only woman to speak who was Josephine Baker. So,
yeah.
But
I noticed that thing about the reaction of a man hearing an idea from a woman. I actually watched one of the members I didn't find out he had done this until maybe a month or so after he had done it. But when I started the SUSU, which is a little micro lending group, he made his own, tried to make his own micro lending group, and it kind of fizzled. And I thought about it. I said, why didn't he just join in to the one that I had proposed? And then I found somebody else in the group had tried to do it, and it was like, I said, wow. You know, also one more point I wanted to make about the brainwashing issue. When I bought up the property, hey, let's come up with a development plan. I found the papers I need to send to the title company, and one of the members of our micro-lending group said, well, let's start a micro-lending group for that. I'm thinking, we already got one. All we have to do is make that one grow. And so we have this thing I've seen nationwide amongst African Americans. We think we have to reinvent the wheel. And I was really young when
Well, yeah, we see that a lot. Everybody wants to do a march now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you know, while marches and you know, acts of civil disobedience, they were instrumental back in the 50s and 60s, and while it is still is a useful tactic when used in moderation, we also have to realize that we are in 2013 and that these people don't care. So you have to shift your tactics according to what's going to move your target. And,
right.
You know, I like marches, I like rallies, I like acts of civil disobedience, but I also have to keep in mind what's going to move my target. And if my target doesn't have any empathy, who doesn't care about the issue from the tip that I'm coming from, they will watch you march until the cows come home. They ain't going to change. And so,
right.
You know, it's they say imitation is a form of flattery. And to some extent it is, but, you know, we tend to get locked in these silos and not think out of the box, and thinking out of the box is good, but the question I had was, okay, this, we talked about the hoodwinking and bamboozling. Who's doing it? Where are these ideas coming from?
I think they're reinforced by white teachers. That's what I think, because, my brain got cleared by a black activist very early, and I was told don't reinvent the wheel. I was told that over and over again as a young person, and it countered whatever it is, whatever type of brainwashing that these white teachers are doing. And I squarely place it on their shoulders. You know, I had African-American teachers all the way up until high school, and I always got that counter information. Don't reinvent the wheel. Don't reinvent the wheel. But the majority of us are not getting that message, and we do it over and over again. I couldn't believe how deep that brainwashing is, that somebody would say, hey, let's start a SUSU for that, when we already have one. It doesn't need to be – we don't need another one.
Well, critical thinking is something that we kind of lost across the board.
Yeah, because there's a lot of teachers for the test now, so yeah.
And, you know, I got to say, I was raised in the North. I got a Northern education, and mm-hmm. I was just blessed to have some really great teachers. And all mm-hmm. of my great teachers shared one quality, whether they were black or white. They all told me, don't use me as the end means of your education. Your education starts with me. It doesn't start and end with me. When you leave here, seek knowledge from a variety of different places. And so I was very blessed in being able, and that's something I carried with me, and I hope I've passed down to my kids. But, mm-hmm. you know, education is now, you know, this is what it says in the book, so it must be right. You know, like that commercial about I saw it on the internet, so it must be true. You know,
right.
We tend to, because I've met a lot of people on both sides with a whole lot of letters behind their names that were idiots. And I've heard some mm-hmm. of the most profound pieces of wisdom out of people who are, quote, unquote, uneducated in book knowledge. But they've
mm-hmm.
got a heap common sense or street knowledge. So I think it's subjective as to how we actually look at knowledge and where we get it from. Because, you know, I've seen some black scholars who have put some stuff out there that I've had to go, I can't. So, you know, but I think knowledge, what people need to understand is one never stops seeking it. One never, one, if you walk into a room and you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Exactly.
So,
I was always told two things. Hang around smart people if you want to be smart. And if you want to be rich, hang around rich people. Now, I had a conversation just the other day with a relative of mine, and we were talking about education. And this comes in where we've been moving on, is that a lot of people go get these, like you said, they got all these letters behind their name. They get this piece of paper. And that piece of paper basically says that you pay for money, you pay money to go to this institution, you went through a prescribed program, you did everything they told you to do, and now here goes this piece of paper. Now, I told him, I said, well, you know, I'm not, kind of, people ask me, well, do you consider yourself educated? I said, yes, I just didn't pay an educational institution for my education. I paid Barnes & Noble, Amazon. I paid my taxes to the local government so that my library would stay open. I went in there and I took my own prescribed course of what I wanted to know, what I needed at that time to figure out whatever problem I was facing, and got it for myself. Most people stop with exactly what the institution taught them, and do not. And this is the thing: if you look at the top level of every industry that exists in the world today, you'll find out that most of the people who run those industries do not have college education.
They don't.
Somebody was explaining to me the other day when I was talking about, when we was talking about political folks and how everybody goes to school for political science and took not one political science class, never, ever, ever. Okay, and how do I end up running? How do I end up running campaigns? Somebody explained to me, don't ever feel bad about what somebody running. Carl Rove doesn't have a damn high school diploma. Carl Rove has nothing but a high school diploma, and he's the architect of this Republican takeover.
Look, to be a political strategist is no different. I tell these kids out here, I said, you know the hustle? They're like, yeah,
thank you.
It's the same thing. It is the same thing.
You know, so you go out there and you tell, you know, and so my thing was, is that a lot of people run around showing paper, but you can't, if a problem comes up that was never answered in a book that you were given, can you solve the problem organically right then and there? Can you come up with something new? Most people can't, and that's where the hood wicked bamboozling is taking place. And that, right there at that point, is because people are no longer being taught how to come up with something new. We're all rebooting or reinventing a wheel somewhere. Think about what we're watching on TV. How many programs are we starting to see from when we were growing up, and all of us are between 40 and 55, that's on this call right now. How many television shows from when we were growing up is now being rebooted?
Right,
bringing back everything. Nobody ain't giving us nothing original.
Mm-hmm.
You starting to see? Oh, I was heard people talking about bringing back this show. They redoing movies. I mean, come on, we redoing stories, changing the color of the actors, trying to make it something new and fresh. Nobody is trying to do nothing new because we've made our brains lazy.
I agree. What's comfortable.
We can't even get new music.
We want to go back to the good old days and a time when life was gentler, or sometimes staying in one place is comfortable and it keeps us from facing the truth. But you're right, there is a lack of originality. I think that goes across the dumbing down of America in general. And it's really, really becoming a problem, especially for, I live outside the box. So, you know, that's my home. And it's very difficult to be in a world where we, you know, people like to conform. They don't want to stand out. They don't want to be seen as different. You know, you hear all the time, particularly when doing political things, well, you know, I would love to help you, but I don't want my neighbors or my coworkers or, you know, insert noun there. I don't want them to find out what I'm doing or, you know, you get email, I love what you're doing, you know, thank you for what you're doing, and I would help you, but I can't because of my job or this and that. And we have gotten into such a bad way of we've gotten afraid, we've gotten beat down. The system has beat us down. Well, we're afraid to do anything to upset that system. So, and I, you know, I see some of it coming out of, you know, the educational system that has fallen down a notch. I see some of it based in religion, you know, and some of it that just comes straight out of the white supremacy playbook. So it's, and but we bought into it, you know. What is that?
Let me ask you a question, Stacey.
What?
I'm going to ask you a question. When you get those emails, how many of those emails come from our white allies?
A lot of them.
They tell us they love what we do, but we're wrong for whatever we're doing. Or they love to tell us we're wrong for what we're doing. Or there's some type of ulterior motive to what we're doing.
A lot of them come from white allies. I do get, you know, the ones that I do get from, you know, black friends and family is usually more along the lines of, why are you doing this? And why are you talking about this? Which actually leads me into a conversation with them about the issues and offer them another perspective. But usually those type are the ones that I get from my white allies. While I appreciate it, you're not helping.
That's a situation which I'm sure sooner or later before the week is over with, I'm not going to broadcast it out live right here today because I haven't been authorized to do so just yet. But before the week is over, you'll find out about something that's going down. And but the emails that I've been getting back for it has been, you know, quite disturbing from the people that I'm looking at and be like, hold on. You understand what we're doing. You know why it's necessary. But you don't want certain people to speak on it. Why is it that certain people can't speak on it? You know, what's your problem with this person? Why is your problem with that person being able to speak on it? It's affecting them directly. So why can't they speak on behalf of themselves? Why does somebody else have to be their mouthpiece? Why? It should come better from the victims. You know, it's just like, well, you know, you're involved. Well, who is best to deal with a situation than the person that is involved? You know, it's this fear, and they always trying to get us to back up off of something because if we do, it's going to cause some trouble. Well, doggone it, it's not for a revolution.
Yeah.
You know, you got to shake it up every once in a while to get something moving.
And you know what they say, a hit dog always hollers. So,
I'm looking at you with the fire eye and be like, so are you really, you know, we've been having this particular opportunity with getting people to move forward, and I keep getting these emails where you keep pushing your foot on the brake. And then you be the same person talking about, we need to move forward, but you got your foot on the brake. So do I need to eliminate you from the conversation? But then you're going to feel some type of way if I have to do that, because then you're going to feel like I'm your enemy. But you're not helping out the big people feel like they don't understand. They're not helping out the process by putting their foot on the brake. It is all nice that you can go downtown whenever you want to, like you said, go to a march and a rally. Because these people that I'm talking about, you know them, because they be around you probably on a regular basis. You probably see them at every rally, every march, they and everything, because they got time, because they got their husbands got money. They little white ladies and their husbands got money. And
you know, I don't want the good white folks who are listening to get upset. You know, we do need and appreciate the money to, because, I mean, let's face it, nothing runs off of rainbows and lollipops. But don't feel that just, you know, that's all you, you know, my work here is done. I've given a couple of dollars. I'm down with the cause.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do a little more than that, and I hate to say that, but
and you giving the money and putting the foot on the brake pedal at the same time.
Well, they're not on your team. If they're doing that, they're not on your team. They've never been on your team.
They go to the next piece of brainwashing I'm talking about. And you, I know you see it because I see it. You know we got some of our own now who are in some of these organizations. They know the money's flowing in, right?
Mm-hmm.
They know the money's
mm-hmm.
flowing in. We can mm-hmm. we get salary because of the money that flows in. But the folks got their foot on the brake, so we know now we ain't got to do nothing. They ain't going to let us do nothing, so we don't see it collect this. It ain't a big, beautiful check, but it's a check. And so now that we're out here, I can draw up posters, and we can go out there and raise hell every once in a while, but nobody's expecting me to produce a result. So I got into the habit of that I'm not producing results. And if you talk about producing results, why are you trying to make me work harder?
Right. Now, see, now you're talking about the smoke and mirrors that side plays, and Scout, you and I have seen a lot of it, and it's true. You know, that's one thing that money does. Money is speech, but money can also curtail speech. And once those checks get written, folks who, you know, they were hollering quite loudly, they get a little quiet. And then you're told, okay, you know, you can say this, but don't say that because you don't want to offend anybody. The whole nature of why I'm raising my voice is offensive. So, you know, for that, I don't see how I can be as offensive as the act that I'm, the issue that I'm advocating for. But, we got a lot of folks who have been on the take and who haven't done the right thing, and they know who they are. And they're starting to come down in Georgia one by one. You know, we've had a couple.
But I'm going to say it so some of them will be mad. And this is for black and whites. The moment I see your face on MSNBC, and you from Georgia, I start calling you, I start feeling suspect. But for some reason, the moment you take your, you come out that set on MSNBC, you get really, really quiet. You start doing some other stuff that you did before you got on MSNBC. And they know who they are. And I've been watching. You can't get me to go away from that out. I don't know what it is. I've been Tom Hartman on Free Speech Television first, or I go to Al Jazeera. But for some reason, the moment they show their face on MSNBC, they come back
it's
home
over.
And they feel like they done made it. They ain't no more work. They ain't no more work being done.
So I guess it's safe. We could talk about we got Al Sharpton, and you know, the black community. We kind of see that for what it is. But the more recent attack that came out of Michael Aaron Zeishan against Cornel West, which was for me kind of stunning, because I was like, you know, what is the point of this? What is the motivation? And I even put a tweet out to Mr. Dyson, asked him that question. What is the motive? You know, what is your motivation? What are you trying to prove? And never got an answer back. But, you know, that was – is. Would you consider that part of the hoodwinking and bamboozling as one of my Facebook?
Is that 30 pieces? Is that 30 pieces of silver that the Pharisees give to Judas to come kiss me on my cheek and ride me to the cross? That's all it is. Now, understand this. I appreciate Judas because Judas played a very critical role. He said he was a catalyst. If you're a Christian, you understand that Jesus, he played a very critical role with Jesus because he allowed the process to start. So what we fail to understand is that we got our Judases. We have to make sure that when our Judases go ahead, or our Buddhists, come stab us in our back, whoever's selling us out, when they do it, we got to realize that that's a catalyst. Don't get mad at them because guess what? They're weak and they're human. We now know, find out where the money coming from. Find out who did it. That is the enemy. They have now shown themselves. That's where your attack goes. They'll start messing with Judas because Judas ain't going to do nothing to lead me back to you.
But who gets more reviled when you call up, when you bring up the Judases in your circle? Excuse me. Because I find that those who blow the whistle are often are the ones who get the most heat. Now, you know, we
you don't call Judas out. You don't call Judas out no more because, see, that's the problem. You call Judas out, then everybody know now. Once you figure out who Judas is, you let Judas hug you. You let him hug you, then give him the kiss. You make him think that you do just like Jesus did. Jesus was all right with Judas. He was mad at Judas. He didn't call, tell nobody. He told everybody upset. I know one of y'all going to sell me out. Yeah,
but Judas, you got to respect the gang.
Somebody in the room might sell us out.
But you got to respect Judas' gangster, though. So, I mean, I can respect the Jews just like I respect the redneck who comes out and says, I don't like black people, never will, never
right,
have.
Right.
I can respect that
stand.
Person because you let me know off the rip where you stand.
Mm-hmm.
I automatically know where you're coming from. So I can respect that.
Jesus exposes the enemy. Once you know who the enemy is, you know where to direct your attack. But when you don't know who Jesus is, you can't win because you suspect to everybody. Once you find out who Judas is, you know Judas is working for somebody. Find that somebody. Now you have a place to place your life in nation. You have somewhere to go. That is the basis. The claws have been removed. The hood we can bamboozle. The hood that you've been weeping has been pulled. The bag has been bamboozled.
Yeah. Well, Scout. Hello, Scout. Can you hear me? Yeah, I love this conversation. I've arrived at my destination, so I gotta log off. Okay.
I'm glad that you brought it up because I'm hoping the folks listening today understand that we got a lot of work, and that a lot of that work ain't physical. It's in our head.
Yes,
well,
it is.
I appreciate you, Ms. Monica. You always struggle to come back to downtown and dating.
And I appreciate you very much. We're going to have to meet one of these days in person.
She gone. Yeah, she gone. All right.
Yeah, she gone.
Go ahead, Stacey.
No, I was just saying we're coming up on 12:58. And so what did you? How long do we have left?
I usually take and give us an extra 30, but we good. I was planning on only doing this one. You know, it's only an hour show, but just in case we get out of there, I always pick some extra time in there. So.
Okay. Well, let's chop it up then. What do you want to talk about? You want to continue talking about issue of...
It's a serious issue, and it's
very complex.
You know, there's a lot of people out there, I mean, that I really wish... Because there's a change that needs to be made. Because right now you see everything falling into certain patterns. You see certain patterns that are being repeated over and over again that are not yielding results. I mean, I said that I'm pledging that I'm trying not to dog out any Hillary bots. I'm trying not to dog them out because they don't call bots to me. They're the same type of individual that we see because... I was having a conversation last night on Facebook about this whole flag thing. You know, the guys down in Valdosta State.
Oh, yeah.
I'm catching all kinds of messages from different directions. You know, some of them are surprising me that particularly I had somebody in the church with me sit there and say, you know, I served this country, and I was, you know, and this is really pissing me off, and I would knock their asses off this flag or die trying. And I was like, whoa, we said the military to defend the Constitution of the United States against all inner, foreign, and domestic. And we bear true allegiance to that and we're fighting. So my point was that the First Amendment to the Constitution protects free speech and expression.
Exactly.
So if you want to watch that, I'm pissed off watching him walk on the flag myself. See, because I'm a veteran, I'm pissing him, you know, I'm pissed off at it. But guess what? I defended his right. This is America. This is the only country in the world where there's ever been a major rebellion, a major rebel group, and their symbol is still allowed to be flown. If you go to Germany and you pull out a swastika, you're going to jail. Okay, you go to China and you pull out a national Chinese flag, you're going to jail. You
can whip out that
flag. You go to Israel and you walk around with a Palestinian flag in Tel Aviv, you're going to jail. In America, you can ride the stars and bars on your truck, you can yell, and holler and scream and talk about, hate them niggas, and you know why they sending you to jail. We fought for that right. Now, what we do is we protest and we go to the ballot box and we do all that other stuff so that we ain't got to pick up no guns and fight each other and chew each other over that stuff.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be bamboozled with because people ready to fight for it.
Well, you know, we have black people have a complicated history with America and the Constitution. And in terms of the Rasta flag thing, you know, my husband served in the Marine Corps. I have a daughter who is in the Navy Reserve. You know, I think someone in every generation has served in the armed forces in my family. So, you know, you have that initial head snapback moment when you see them stepping on the flag. But then I had to keep two things in mind. The first point that you brought up about, you know, exactly what rights people have to do in this country that are afforded to them under the Constitution. And then I have to remember that they're reflecting what the perspective of what America and the whole hypocrisy from the day it was created has on us. And I think they talked about this a little bit today on MSNBC. I think it was on Melissa Harris Perry's show. But, you know, it's very difficult to talk. When we talk about the Constitution, we're talking about a document that at first did not include, and for me as a woman and an African-American, it did not include me. There's, right. You know, a telling statement that says by consent of the governed. So that meant it left a whole lot of people out. So just to have a document that's thrown up as the gold standard, so to speak, of liberty and democracy, you know, people, the founding fathers who wrote this own slaves, you know, while they were writing this. So when you talk about freedom and democracy and the pursuit of happiness, you know, at some point we get down to who was it designed for. But then we also have, for a more perfect union. So, you know, we know we have an indication that they knew it was flawed and that it was supposed to be improved upon. But for those students down there, I think what we're seeing, what we're not talking about is the issue that led to them feeling disillusioned and disenfranchised from the beginning of their birth.
Exactly. And that's the whole point that always gets missed, is that why are people protesting? The why part. The why. You know, terrorism is wrong. People blowing up buildings, flying airplanes in them, putting bombs beside the roads, all that stuff that is crazy.
Well, I mean, just, we're looking at, you know,
why are they doing it?
Why are they upset? Why are they mad? And nobody's bothered to ask that question. We've had everybody go into their separate corners over the flag issue and how offensive they find it over the flag and, you know, the actions of the that were taken by the lady who was preventing them from doing it. And now you've got
a flag.
Now you got a manhunt out for this dude with the alleged gun in the bag. And they're making it look like, you know, he's Osama bin Laden, ready to wage jihad. Brother's pissed. I give him that. Whether he's about to go full tilt, I don't think so. I think he would have did that when he first rolled up in the spot, but then that's just my personal observation. But I think he did. But, you know, it was kind of disturbing to see his face on TV and made it seem like, you know, he's one of America's 10 most wanted. And, you know, I got questions, you know, how did the gun, you know, is that his gun? How do we know it's his gun? You know, it was in his bag.
And that goes out to that hoodwinked and bamboozled.
Right.
He was protesting. Because if he wanted to be violent, he would have did that off the jump. But he's walking around.
He
would
have came in, right.
It was a setup. No, it was a setup when the white woman came to get his flag. She'd have been laying down that bleep. They wouldn't have allowed the police to handle it. They would have slapped bars and bars and her behind then. That would have been a setup. They didn't
right.
do that. When the police keep going, everybody concentrate on the flag and the guns, and not concentrating on the issue of why they were walking on the flag. They were walking on the flag because they feel like America has walked on them.
And you know, I can totally validate their feelings. I mean, I'm 52 years old, and I've seen a lot more than they have. And you know, this is a warning to white America. You know, that I'm not gonna lie. I'm a fan of Dr. King and nonviolence to a point.
Right.
I don't promote nonviolence, but I do promote self-defense. I do believe that there is a need for that, and that's where I come to clash with the nonviolent movement. But you've got people out here who this is over 400 years of anger coming through the ages, and it has reached the tipping point. Folks are mad, and it's getting very difficult to talk to certain factions who are ready. They're just, you know, we've got a side. You know, we all know that there's a contingency of white folks who are ready to set it off the day President Obama won the election. We've been kind of, you know, it's really no surprise to us when we hear them say certain things in the media because we kind of expected that. But there's also a building anger on the left in communities of color, particularly the black community. People are pissed off. And they're not going to take this anymore. And we are going to have a flashpoint unless we start addressing the people and start not only, we have to listen to what people are saying and doing. And this was a clear manifestation of the anger, the hurt, the pain, the frustration, the hypocrisy of living in two Americas. Because we all, anybody who's a person of color, we've all learned to live in two Americas, and you brought that up about, you know, the talking white thing. We all know how to do it. My husband, he gets on me when I get on the phone, and he goes, oh, you put your John Marshall Law School voice on. Because we all, you know, when you do certain things in business, we'll talk one way. At home, we'll talk with a different dialect or around people who we're comfortable. Because we've learned in order to survive in America, we have to have this type of duality for us to survive and to actually fit in. So,
right.
But the Valdosta thing, that's a little, you know, it's starting to, it is off the rails already.
It went off the rails immediately. The moment that started, you know, I've been watching it since it happened. I mean, I've had even breaks inside of my own family where we disagree about it. And I'm like, okay, I got family members who've never served in the military talking about how I was disrespectful to the flag. And I'm like, hold on, if anybody should be mad, it should be me. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because, well, I'm a veteran. I'm a Boy Scout. But the thing is, what y'all failing to realize, like, y'all getting mad for us and talking about people that died for the flag and this, that, and the other. my thing is, I understand what both of all of my oaths said, my oath as a Boy Scout, is that I respect the right of people to be able to exercise their constitutional rights. As a veteran and serving in the military, I understood that my job was to defend not the United States, but that Constitution. It's to make sure
right.
that those people can exercise that right. I am not told to defend that damn piece of dirt. Dirt ain't got nothing to do with it. I am told to defend that document. To make sure what that document stands for continues to stand. That's what our oath is. You know, I'm talking about I'm defending the United States of America. It's the Constitution of the United States of America. Okay? I'm not, you know, so I understand what my job was.
Right.
And what my job is still today as a citizen. Is that we don't, people think that, and I posted this on Facebook just last night. The same people who misinterpret the Constitution are the same ones who find their Bible scripture to support their bigotry, and they're the exact same people who want us to get rid of all public education.
Yeah.
So reading is fundamental.
And
reading
comprehension is essential.
Thank you. And the thing is that we don't comprehend, even as Americans, we don't understand what that means. We sit there and we hold up the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution of the United States, the Gettysburg Address, the I Have a Dream speech, you know, Obama's speech the night that he won the inauguration. We take all of these documents and speeches and we hold them up as if they're religious icons. But we truly don't understand what they mean. It's just like the Bible. You know, the Bible, you know, people tell you in a minute, throw it at you and use it to hurt you, but they don't understand that Jesus was talking about love. Okay? The Constitution talks about freedom. And everybody wants to find some kind of way to use these documents to restrict somebody else. You have a very hard time convincing me that you can read and comprehend the English language, that if you believe that any of those documents put restrictions on people.
Well,
it
was supposed to give freedom to a certain set of people. That's the first part of it.
Right.
And
that's the original sin of America.
So,
but,
you know,
well, you
and
said before,
but people will argue, though, on the flip side, people will argue that you fought for a promise that didn't include you.
Exactly. True that.
So, you know, and I can see that.
We know that the Constitution was supposed to be, like you said earlier, that they knew it was flawed. That's why they made
a more perfect union.
Right. And they gave a procedure to amending it so that we
and
would, they, you know, as time came along, we were going this, okay, we need to change this because we screwed this up in the beginning. We need to clarify this and this, that, and the other.
Well, they had faith that we would be smarter and wiser than they were, and sadly, we went in the wrong direction. And
right, because in the last 8 years, and I mean, people want, you know, on the political spectrum, will talk about the last 30. But until and anybody that does not believe this, you know, ain't been paying attention. The moment that President Barack Hussein Obama took office, things changed very rapidly.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, and we, you know, now true enough.
We knew that, but but how many black people didn't expect that? I mean, really, how many black people did not expect America to lose its mind? When
those people who believe that actually, it's on now. You can think, remember the song when it came out? Where was it on? My Lambo is blue and my president is black.
Yeah.
You know, we were turned off from November 2008 to about January 2010. We were turned up.
We were not only turned up, that was an economic development plan, because I remember everybody and their mama had, you couldn't go in the store without finding an Obama shirt in 2008. I mean, that was an economic empowerment plan right there.
I'm sitting here looking, I'm sitting here on my desk looking at an Obama action figure. Okay? Sitting here looking at it in the box. He in the box. They never popped and played with. He in the box, sitting out. But the thing is, you know, if you were smart and you understood America, you would have understood that that wasn't going to change anything. That was actually going to start a rebellion. People don't even realize this. If you were a student of history, again, education, you know, not being brainwashed into what's going on, history is important, people. Yeah, think about it. They didn't want Lincoln to be president. The moment Lincoln became president, what did those people do? They asked the fool to start a war. The only reason they ain't did it now because they understand that a war on American soil is not economically beneficial to them. Because that means we got everybody's stuff going to get blown up. Not just the stuff in the hood, because the folks in the hood are sooner or later going to come out and we're going to start striking and everybody's stuff get burnt down. That's not economically beneficial. In the short term.
Well, that's
to figure out how to hijack our rights and hijack the country from us without there being bloodshed. And they're having a hard time doing that because guess what? Now they're shooting us in the street. Now for all the white people who sit there and say, yes, white people are dying in higher numbers than black folks. This is true. And guess what? You need to be concerned about that too. Because the white people that are dying are poor white people. They're not rich white people.
Right.
You need to be concerned too, though. The fact that we get mad, you need to be getting mad with us for if there's 273 blacks that died last year at the hands of African Americans, at the hands of the police, and 412 whites died at the hands of the police, it sounds like y'all need to be teaming up with us because it ain't up against us, it's up against them.
I think the difference is that it's so brazen and so bold in communities of color. You know what's funny? It was kind of like dark funny, but you know the guy out west who got, I mean, he got an epic beat down by these cops. He was on a horse.
Right.
And they beat dude down in the desert. And what the first thing that I noticed when I saw the video, I was like, man, even the horse knew it was wrong. The horse backed up like he was like, you know, like the horse was saying, y'all didn't have to do him like that. But we've seen atrocities and horrendous acts of violence and injustices played upon. They started with American Indians and worked their way up there. Native Americans, I should say, and worked their way up. And they have perfected it on us. And at some point, they're going to run out of people to do it to. And, yeah, they have done it to white people. Now, why white people aren't in arms about it, that's a really good question. It could be because they don't know about it. Because just think about it, you know. I mean, you go on social media now, and I don't think there's a day you can go past without seeing a video of somebody getting beat down. Or you know, shot or you know, some other act of aggression. So social media has allowed us to see this, but what we're seeing in the black community, this isn't really new. We've been telling folks about this for years. We just didn't have the conclusive proof to back it up. Now with technology, we're able to prove this has been going on. So for some people, this is a period of enlightenment. Well, a lot of us people of color, this is like, we told you, but I'm kind of beyond that. I'm like, what are we going to do about it? Because I'm tired of seeing it.
Right.
And it, for me, you know, although I'm a stakeholder in the black community, I don't want to see this done to anybody. So I'm kind of at the point where I'm ready to start fixing this, and I'm a little tired of the, oh, my gosh, you know, have you seen this? Yeah, I've seen it, and I'm tired of seeing it. And
the thing people don't realize, and you know, and I don't tell people this, is that, you know, some people, you got those people who say, oh, the police are out there risking their lives and this, that, and the other, and blah, blah, blah. This is true. They are out there risking their lives. And a lot of cops are good cops, but if you are a cop and you see one of your fellow cops beating the hell out of somebody and you know that is wrong, you need to, you know it's against the law, you need to stop him and arrest his ass too.
Mm-hmm.
But
and you know,
so when you don't do that, so when you're a cop and you're one of the good cops and you ain't never beat the hell out of nobody, but you know you don't stand back and watch, you are just as guilty. Because if I'm with some guys and they walk into a house and we break into it, I ain't got to touch nothing. I ain't had to touch the door. I ain't had to do nothing. All I have to do is walk in the house behind them. I am considered an accessory to that crime.
Or you could give them a ride. You could give them a ride, drop them off, and the next thing you know, you're going down for just giving them a ride. But you know, one of the funniest things is to hear law enforcement talk about the black community needs to, you know, we need to let go of that stop snitching mentality. And it's like, how about y'all be the, you know, step up and do that first? Because we see time and time again, law enforcement. And, you know, some of this I totally understand, being a military wife for about 15 years and seeing how the military operates. It's the same mentality. Military, you are taught from boot camp that you are a brotherhood, you stick together, you don't snitch on your people. What do gangs teach?
So
that's the same mentality that runs
the brotherhood. We understand that. So my thing is, why do you want me to take a snitch on my crew and you're not going to snitch on your crew? If that's
right,
the case, we understand what the rules are. Don't be mad at us when we follow the rules. That's the rules of the jungle. We know you're not going to snitch on your crew. I'm not snitching on mine. So that means I'm going to have to catch you red-handed and you're going to have to catch me red-handed. Race on. You know what I'm saying? Let's get the game has never been, the rules of the game has never been set. We know what we're playing by. You know what I'm saying? So, but then my thing is, in the military, I understood it a little bit differently because, and this is another problem, I understood it because I know overseas we're fighting, and we know that the other side is looking to kill you. We're hunting them, and they're hunting us. But see, here in America, the police force is supposed to be protect and serve. You're not supposed to be... this is not part of the alien. Well, you chasing me, trying to cut me down. You know what I'm saying? So there's no need to be, you're supposed to all be one community, and your job is to come in there and keep the peace. You're supposed to be a peace officer. But now the police show up, the mere fact that the police show up is going to cause an uprising.
But they're hunting us down. So... it's the same mentality.
It's supposed to be different, but it's not.
Right. The theaters may be different, but the actions and the mentality, and I mean, you see police departments who are being trained by military, you know, ex-military officers, and, you know, I'm sure you and my husband will probably be in agreement that how military tactics have no place in community policing. It is a totally different mindset. But we've adopted it.
Military tactics. The moment you start employing military tactics on a community, what you automatically get is an insurgency. You see it just like in Iraq. You had the soldiers coming to Iraq, okay? Now, true enough, our goal was to liberate them from their dictator, okay? But the moment we started going in their neighborhoods, kicking down doors and slashing people out of houses, all of them get pissed when you slash their house up, okay? So then you keep doing that, I'll start fighting back. Same thing here in America. If I come into your neighborhood and I'm slamming folks on their back all the time, if I'm kicking down doors, and I'm in police-style vehicles, military-style vehicles, with military-style weapons, I see an army invading my neighborhood. So guess what's going to happen now? We're going to be an insurgency. We got people, we got people them sitting out on the corner. Hey, the folk that come in the neighborhood, everybody start locking doors, stashing stuff, getting ready, because they know somebody fixing to go down.
Right.
And
you know... But we even know that what the military has been doing really hasn't been viable. I mean, you could look at the Middle East and look how Petraeus, when he went into Iraq, how he flipped the script on how, you know, to quell down what was going on in Iraq. They had to change their tactics as to how they were, managing these areas. So, I mean, we can say that the hardcore military tactics, the slash and burn, scorched earth policy, whether it's a community in America or a neighborhood in Iraq, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Because I'll explain something to you, and this might be even another show one day down the line, because we got about 4 minutes left. But if you go look through,
we're going to have to make this a series.
You go through the history of military occupations that America participated in. Do you realize that when we conquered Germany, the Germans didn't go on to a damn insurrection? Why? Because the moment we went in there, the very first thing that those generals did was let the Germans be in charge of certain stuff. And they said, okay, we're going to find out who else is the bad guy is. You know, we're going to help y'all rebuild y'all country. We did the same thing in Japan. But we respected those people. We don't respect Muslims. We don't respect Africans. We don't respect Hispanics. So we're going that shit down. Pick them off. Make them want to fight us.
Well, the problem is everyone else is seeing anyone who is non-white, not of European descent, is seen as different. And to me, our policies, the way we interact, we look at each other as being somehow inferior or different, you know. And that is, I think, one of the crux of the problems that we have to really look at. But this is, it's going to take more than an hour show to chop this up, and I suspect we'll have to come back here. There's a lot of different aspects.
Because
I want to talk about religion and how it hoodwinks and bamboozles people.
All right, we're going to talk about religion next week, so let's roll with that. And everybody, this is Dow Thomas. Today is Scott Smith of State of Hawkins. And we will see y'all again next week. Peace out.
Take care, everybody.